extols the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Vishnu. It describes in this verse that one who remembers the beautiful form of the Lord, whose eyes resembles the lotus petals, such a person becomes purified from within and without. What does it mean to be purified? The soul is essentially pure, just as the sun in the sky is pure. And the rays of the sun are life-giving and beneficial for all living beings. But when the sun is obscured by a cloud, it cannot be perceived. Similarly, the beauty of the soul, which is part of God, cannot be appreciated as long as it is covered by the cloud of ignorance. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manashastan indriyani prakriti stani karashti. The spirit soul, being part of Krishna, have the qualities of Krishna, although infinitesimal. Krishna, Bhagavan, is infinite, and the soul is infinitesimal. That means the quality of beauty. All the opulences of God, in fact, are reflected by the soul. But this cloud of ignorance keeps the pure transcendental qualities of the soul hidden. And what we see are the symptoms of ignorance: lust, kama, anger, krodha, greed, lobha, envy, matsara, illusion, and pride. Now, these enemies, the six enemies of the soul, are very powerful because they are completely empowered by Maya, or the illusory energy. The fact is, these six enemies are unconquerable. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna declares, Daivi he shuguna mayi mama maya duratyaya mam evam ye prapadyante maya metta tarantite. That this material energy and all of her agents are unconquerable, very difficult to overcome. Lust is the greatest enemy. In fact, Krishna tells Arjuna, in the third chapter of Gita, Arjuna asks, my dear Krishna, why is it that even a man who is seriously on the spiritual path is impelled as if by force to engage in sinful, unwanted activities? Sometimes with our logic, with our intelligence, with our reason, we know something is not right. And we know the consequences of engaging in certain activities. but yet there is a force within us that it impels us, that forces us to engage in abominable things. Arjuna said, what is that force? Because you know, when you're at war, you have to know who your enemy is before you can conquer your enemy. Just like if in a kingdom we find out that there is some spy amongst your ministers, you have to find out which one it is. Otherwise, you will be defeated. So similarly, there are so many agents within our heart. Of those things within my heart, what is it? Who is it that is really the enemy? Who is it? What is it that is impelling me to engage in abominable activities by force? And Krishna responds, Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava mahoshana mahapapma vidyenami habairanam. It is kama, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of the contact of the material mode of passion, which is later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Now, what does lust mean? Kama. Some people have a very crude, harsh conception that lust means some erotic relationship with a woman illicitly. That is a very, very horribly gross idea of kama. But actually, kama means any desire we have separate from God's. Huh? Even the most pious people are victim of kama in the real sense. Even some of the most refined, sophisticated, and religious people are victims of kama in the true sense. Krishna says in Gita, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shantim rachchati. That everything belongs to me. All the planets and everything within all planets is my property. And you are my property. Every living being is my property. And everything is meant for my enjoyment. The misconception that anything is meant for my enjoyment, to see or use anything for any other purpose than the enjoyment of God, is considered in Bhagavad Gita to be kama or lust, the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. Now, how to conquer this all-devouring sinful enemy? There is a method, and it is a sure 100% method. Huh? And the Supreme Lord showed us the method in a wonderful way. What he did is he first sent to this world lust personified. Who knows who that personality was? Ravana. Huh? Ravana was the most striking emblem of lust in the history of all creation. He was so blatant and so straightforward in his position. Sita is the property of Ram. Sita is none other than Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. All the fortune of the world is the energy of Sita, the daughter of King Janak. What do we mean when we say goddess of fortune? What is fortune? Fortune does not simply mean money. Fortune means anything good. When you wish someone good fortune, it doesn't mean simply you wish him a lot of money. Fortune means good health. Fortune means popularity. Fortune means comforts in life. Fortune means good friendship, good family. It also means nice income. Fortune means anything good within this world. That is good fortune. And to lose anything good is misfortune. So Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. Anything that is good, anything that we like, is the energy of Lakshmi Devi. And in one sense, it is none different than Lakshmi Devi. Now, as we know, Lakshmi Devi never, ever, ever leaves the feet of Narayan. Her eternal position is at his feet, massaging him. As a matter of fact, one name of Lakshmi is Shri, Shriji. And one name of Vishnu is Srivats. Why is he named Srivats? Because Lakshmi, in order to never, ever, ever be separated from Vishnu, she has appeared as a golden hair on his chest. In this form, she never leaves his heart. She is closest to his heart at all times. This is also the meaning of the name Srinivas, that Vishnu always has Sri upon his heart. Srinathji, Vishnu is the Lord and the Master of Lakshmi Devi. So Lakshmi never leaves Vishnu. So what happens when we take the fortune of this world and we try to separate it from Vishnu by using it for our own satisfaction? Lakshmi expands herself, same energy, same person, but she appears in her form of Durga. Durga in Sanskrit literally means prison. When you see Lakshmi, she has a lotus flower in her hand, which is a sign of auspiciousness, victory and success and beauty and opulence. In another hand, she's offering her blessings. Those who approach her by using her energy in the service of Vishnu, she appears before that person in this beautiful form. But those who take the property of Vishnu, those who take her and try to use her to exploit her for their sense gratification, understand all fortune in this world is Lakshmi. When we try to enjoy Lakshmi, instead of offering her to Vishnu where she belongs, and she appears as Durga. Durga does not carry lotus flowers. She carries swords and tridents and clubs. This trident is her most formidable weapon. It has three prongs, which signify the threefold miseries of material existence: adi-atmaka, adi-daivaka, and adi-bhautika. Miseries caused by one's own body and mind, such as mental distress, worrying, physical disease, old age. Miseries caused by other living beings. Sometimes people insult you. Sometimes people cheat you. Sometimes people exploit you. Sometimes even your loved ones just completely disappoint you. And adi-daivaka, which is miseries caused by natural disturbances, such as too much heat, too much cold, too much rain, too much wind, volcanoes, hurricanes, cyclones, tornadoes. Durga Devi is constantly keeping those persons who are under her control. She keeps them in line with this trident, stabbing their hearts with the threefold miseries of material existence. So know that all fortunate things in this world are Lakshmi Devi. Now, Lakshmi Devi appeared as Goddess Sita. And everyone knows that Sita is exclusively meant for Ram. What is the definition of love? Love means to assist Sita in her affair with Ram. Is that not what Rava is? Is that not what Hanuman and Lakshman and Sugriva and all the residents of Ayodhya did? The residents of Ayodhya, their only desire was to see Sita and Ram happy. That was their only motivating force in life. They would die at any moment if it helped Sita and Ram enjoy together. They had no false ego. Their only desire was to simply see Sita and Ram together happy. And therefore, when they saw Sita and Ram together happy, that gave them the greatest, most ultimate bliss, ecstasy, and satisfaction in life. The residents of Ayodhya, their bliss, their happiness, was incomprehensible by the material mind. But Ravana, he wanted to take Sita for himself. That is called kama, or lust. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that love is the natural inclination of the soul to want to give pleasure to God. But when that natural affection for God is misplaced in trying to enjoy the property of God for our own selfish interests, then that love is transformed into lust or kama. Prema and kama is the same energy. Love and lust is the same energy. It is the same inclination within us. Prema is when that energy within us of affection is placed toward God, and when it is placed anywhere else, it is called kama or lust. So Ravana was very tricky. How he stole Sita. He disguised himself as a sadhu. He was a very great mystic yogi. Ravana had 10 heads. And he was given benediction by Lord Shankar that if anyone chopped off his heads, they would grow right back. He was a terrible, monstrous-looking creature. My God. Of course, he thought himself very handsome. But for any distinguished person, he was horrible. How is it that he completely changed his form in every respect? Where he only had one head, huh? And he looked like a very, very gentle, peaceful saint. Huh? It is because he had mystic power. He had tremendous mystic power. He could perform incredible miracles. He was a great yogi. Of course, in today's society, if someone could perform some little miracle, they are considered God. Huh? Sometimes somebody tells me that my guru is God. Of course, in the scripture, it explains who God is and when he appears in this world. One time I was riding in a bus from Kurukshetra to Rishikesh. And I was sitting next to this man. And when you're dressed like this, naturally anyone who has any philosophical inclinations wants to tell you what they know. Huh? You become a very, very good target for anybody who has any religious information that they want to tell someone. So this person said to me, that my guru, he is God. Huh? And I just looked at him and said, Hare Krishna. So then my friend who was with me, he started arguing with this person like anything. Your guru is not God. How could he be God? And they started getting in a very fierce argument. And by this time, this person hated us because we were offending his guru. I was just looking out the window, trying to see the nice trees and the Himalayas and everything else. And then my friend said, I'm finished talking to this person. He thinks his guru is God. Now, you tell my friend here, and he'll tell you who your guru really is. And then I looked and I said, well, thank you very much. Said, my guru is God. I said, your guru is God. I'm not saying he isn't God, but you have to prove to me that he's God. You can't expect me to just believe anybody's God just because you say, what is the evidence? The first thing he did, he says, my guru could perform miracles. I said, is that the sign of God? What miracles can he perform? He told me how he could create things, he'd make watches and make all different varieties of things. And how he could change his form. I said, sounds like Ravana. He could do all these things too. Was Ravana God? Huh? Ravana made his whole city into gold. That was a mystic power. You think anyone could just make their whole city into gold? Ravana was a ten-headed monster. He could look like a very nice, saintly sadhu. And Marichi, one of his other demons, he was also a rakshasa monster. And he could change his form into a beautiful, playful deer. And we read in the story of Hiranyaksha fighting with Lord Varaha, during that battle, not only did Hiranyaksha create a watch or another little gift, but he created, my God, all of a sudden he made mountains fall from the sky, and hundreds and thousands of millions of lions and tigers and snakes just showering from the clouds. And tidal waves started coming at Lord Varaha. He created all this. Was Hiranyaksha God? Was Ravana God? They're demons. Even a demon, an asura, an enemy of God, through the mystic yoga process could perform miracles. It's not the sign of God. So then he began to explain. But everyone accepts him as God. What do you mean everyone accepts him? I haven't accepted him. Not everyone accepted him. I'm not saying he's not, but you just prove to me. If you can prove to me, I will worship him and surrender, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to him. You have to convince me. I'm born in the West. And, you know, in the West, we don't accept things so easy. And he said, well, how do you know who is God? I said, you're asking me. That the criterion is what the scriptures say. The scriptures tell us when God appears, how he appears, and why he appears. And without the criterion of the scripture, anyone could claim they're God, and how do we know? Therefore, God tells us when and how he appears. And it's explained that in Kali Yuga, God appears three times. Only three times. There may be many great gurus and may, pr- prophets who are representatives of God. But God himself, Bhagavan, only appears in Kali Yuga three times. When Krishna left this world, Kali Yuga began. He appeared in Dwarapa Yuga. His next incarnation is Lord Buddha. Keshavadrita Bhuda Sarira Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Keshavadrita Bhuda Sarira Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Jaya Jagadisha Hari. And it describes that Lord Buddha appears in the province of the Magda province. It describes his father's name. His father's name is Vishnu Jyoti. And it describes what his mission is, to stop unnecessary animal slaughter and to establish the principle of ahimsa. Is your guru Lord Buddha? Said, no, not Lord Buddha, obviously. Lord Buddha appeared 2,500 years ago. All right. He said, my guru must be the next one. Krishna Varanam Tvasa Krishnam Sango Pangrasya Parashanam Jagyai Sankirtana Praya Jantehi Sumedasha. It describes the next form of God. He appears in a beautiful golden complexion. And he's constantly with his arms raised chanting the holy names and dancing in kirtan. And that was Lord Chaitanya. He appeared 500 years ago. He said, well, that's not the one either. My guru doesn't look like that either. He said, he must be the next one. I said, the next one is Kalki Avatar. He said, that's it. My guru is Kalki Avatar. Ah, he is. Acha. Kalki Avatar comes on a white horse. And with a sword, he cuts off the heads of the demons. And he appears at the end of Kali Yuga, which happens to be 427,000 years from today. He said, well, that's not my guru. So then he said to me, you know, maybe my guru isn't God. And then he asked me, who is God? What is God? And we began to explain the real qualities of God. Parasara Muni, the great father of Vyasudeva, describes in the Shastra that Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, is he who possesses all opulences in full. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yasasana, that he is the possessor of all wealth, all knowledge, all beauty, all fame, all strength, and all renunciation. That is Bhagavan. And a real guru is not one who claims to be God, but who claims to be the humble servant, the instrument in the hands of God to deliver the mercy of God. So Ravana, he was worshipped in Lanka as God. And he had many, many mystic powers beyond anybody today. He didn't claim only to be God, he claimed to be better than God. Huh? When Suparnaka, his sister, told him about the beauty of Sita, he decided, I'm going to get her for myself. I am the supreme enjoyer. No one has a right to enjoy a beautiful woman like that except me. And Vibhishan and other advisors said, no, please, Ravana. She's Ram's wife. Ram is very powerful. He's God. He's Bhagavan. Ravana said, I am Bhagavan. Ram is nothing. I will destroy him. Everything is meant for my enjoyment. Huh? And therefore he disguised himself and he stole away Sita. And he brought her to Sri Lanka. And of course, we read in the Ramayana by Valmiki Muni of how Lord Ram and his brother Lakshman, looking for goddess Janaki, he made alliances with Sugriva and Hanumanji, and together with the great army of monkeys, they attacked the island of Sri Lanka. And there was a great war. And Ravana was so powerful
that no one could defeat him.
His son Indrajit was formidable in battle. He even conquered Indra himself. Between Ravana, Indrajit, Kumbhakarna, and the other Rakshasas in his army, even the demigods in the heavens were absolutely stripped of their pride and were living in constant fear. They were utterly unconquerable by any human, by any jivatma. Ravana was the symbol of Kama. And know, whatever desire you have to enjoy separate from God in your heart is due to the presence of Ravana living there. Huh? When Indra understood his helpless position before the power of Ravana, Indra, with all the other devatas and all the other sadhus, they approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ram, and said, "Please, only you can save us. Only you can help us. You are our only shelter." And Ram descended on this world. And how this great battle with Ravana took place. Lord Sri Ramchandra with his mighty bows, he wanted to show the world how powerful Ravana really was, how powerful lust really is. Every time he cut off the heads of Ravana, another one grew. Doesn't that sound like our own material desires? Every time you try to give up something, every time you do some jagga, some sacrifice, some puja, and you give up one material sinful desire, immediately another head grows, and you think, "Oh my God." Huh? Then you perform so much penance and atonement, and you practice yoga, and you take vows to give up this lusty propensity in your heart, and finally you conquer it, you give it up, and then, whoop, another head grows. For those on the spiritual path who are trying to give up material attachments, they know that as soon as you cut down one head, 10 more grow. Huh? It's an endless will. It's an endless battle. Ravana wanted to show us all the nature of lust. That's how he was playing with Ravan in this way, by cutting off his head. First they'd be cut, then they'd grow. Finally, Ram, he understood that I must shoot my specialist most arrow in his heart. And when he cracked his heart, pierced his heart, Ravana fell to the ground. Now Ram is the only one that has that arrow. That arrow cannot be obtained by any mortal, by any jiva, by any living entity. It is the exclusive power of Ram. That is why Lord Sri Krishna says in Gita, "Daivi heshu guna mayi mama maya duratyaya mam eva me prapadyate maya meta tarantitam." That this material energy, this maya, this kama, is very, very difficult to overcome. But one who surrenders to me, I take the war in my own hands. I will conquer that lust. I will conquer Ravana within your heart. For me it is no difficulty. And that is why Krishna says, "Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam mam papajate vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sudurlava." After many births and deaths of practicing the various religious systems of the world and the different processes of yoga, when one finally comes to the point of knowledge, he surrenders to Vasudeva, surrenders to Krishna, surrenders to Ram, knowing him to be the cause of all causes and all that is. When you surrender to the Lord,
You put your life in his hands, under his protection, and he is almighty.
And that is the difference between bhakti and the other yoga systems. The other yoga systems, by meditation, by pranayama, by yoga asanas, by the discriminatory power of jnana or knowledge, we are trying to conquer Ravana within our own heart. Even Vishwamitra Muni, he was the greatest of all yogis. How great he was! He lived in Gomuk, the source of the Ganges. And in the winter, when it's just so covered with snow, we went there in the summer to bathe. Have you ever? How many have been to Gomukh, the source of Ganga? Last year, a group of us went. In the month of July, the hottest month of the year. At that place, it is the hottest month. In May, it's still snow. And we went to take bath, and my God, it's so cold. Most of my friends, they went in and it's not that they came out. The coldness pushed them out. Literally, like a launching pad. They went in, and immediately after going underwater, they just went, whoop, and they just like flew out back onto the rocks. And they thought, So I was thinking, I'm going to chant my Gayatri Mantra in the Ganga. Vishwamitra Muni would stay in the Ganga for 6 months without being disturbed. So, not Vishwamitra Muni, but at least I could chant Gayatri Mantra. So I went in, and I will tell you, I'm not Vishwamitra Muni. It was the absolutely fastest Gayatri Mantra I've ever chanted in my life. I never knew I could utter Sanskrit syllables so fast. The cold empowered me to just... And as soon as the Gayatri Mantra was done, I flew out. Very cold. Vishwamitra Muni is a very great yogi. For 6 months a year, he'd be up to his neck in the Ganges, in the peaks of the Himalayas. And through this process, he was trying to conquer kama. And everyone was thinking, my God, of all yogis, he has actually successfully conquered kama altogether. His senses were like stone. They were unfazed by anything. So much so that Indra was feeling that, my God, this man is so powerful. He may conquer my heavenly kingdom. So he sent down the beautiful Apsara Menaka. And while Vishwamitra was sitting in his samadhi, she came and she tinkled her bangles like this. And then she tinkled her ankle bells. Tiddle, 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 tiddle. And when he heard this, he was thinking, so pleasing is this sound. What is it? And he opened his eyes and he saw the beautiful woman. And when he saw her beauty, what happened? From within his head, one of those 10 hands went, whoop. Again, the head of lust appeared. Kama. And he fell from his yogic position. You see, by any yogic process, by our own endeavor, it is impossible for any length of time to conquer Ravana within our heart. But Krishna says, Bhaktya tvananyaya shakyam aham evam vidwarajana jyatam drastam cha tatvena praveshtam cha paranta. Through the process of bhakti, one can understand me as I am. Sarva dharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami mashcha. This is what it means. Abandon all other yoga processes, abandon all varieties of religion, and just surrender to me. I will protect you. I will take care of you. I will destroy the demons in your heart with my arrows. When we surrender to the Lord, Ram appears within our heart. I began this lecture this evening by chanting this beautiful prayer from the Garuda Purana. Om apavitra pavitro va sarvavastam gato biva yasmaret pundarikaksham sabhyabhyantarasuchi. This is what it means. That when we remember Krishna, when we remember Lord Sri Ramchandraji, he is non-different than that remembrance. The process of bhakti is manmana bhavamad bhakto madhya jimnamamasmi, to always remember the Lord, to become his devotee, to worship him and to offer your homage unto him. Through this process, Ram appears within our heart. And with his mighty arrows, he shoots right into the heart of Ravana. And all his heads and everything else falls and disappears from our life eternally. So on the 10th of this month, on the 8th of this, what day? 10th. We are celebrating Dasara, sometimes called Ram Vijayotsava. It is the day when we celebrate the grand victory of Lord Ramchandra over the mighty demon Asura, Ravana. And of course, this is a factual, historical event that took place in Sri Lanka during the Treta Yuga. But know that it is also a lila that can take place within your own heart when you take shelter of Lord Sri Ramchandra. And therefore, on this day, and in preparation for this day, we should truly meditate on what this lila means to us, what it means to our life. The symbol of Kama, Ravana, who is dwelling in the heart of all conditioned souls and is the sinful, deadly enemy of every living being, can only be defeated as exhibited on this most holy day of Dasara by the mighty glory of Ram. By remembering Ram, he appears in our heart. By remembering him, he kills all the demons within our heart. Therefore, Lord Kapiladeva explained that of all the scriptures throughout the world, there are so many instructions, so many vows, so many rituals, so many pujas, so much philosophy. But it's all meant to bring us to simply one conclusion: to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar Yahan Krishna Tahan Mai Maya Radhikar. Krishna is like the sun, and Maya, ignorance, with all of her consorts, which are these enemies and these demons, they are like darkness. In the presence of the sun, darkness cannot exist. When we remember God with devotion in our hearts, all the bad qualities, all illusions, all ignorance is dispelled. And that is why it is said in Ramayana, it is said in Bhagavatam, it is said in all the great scriptures which teach the highest platform of love, prema, that in this age of Kali Yuga, there is no more glorious process. There is no greater benediction in the chanting of the names of God. Cheto darapanam marajanam bhava mahadavang nidibhapanam. That the prime benediction, the ultimate mercy of the Lord, is his holy name. Kali kale namrupe krishnavatar. The fact is that Krishna has incarnated in this age of Kali in the name, in his holy name. And the name of God is so powerful It has all the potencies of God Himself. Nam nam akari bahudan nija sarva shaktis. All the strength, all the beauty, all the glory, all the opulence of the Lord is fully manifested within His name.
And Ram was, oh my God. Of course He is God.
So, He looked at Hanuman, and Hanuman said, Ram, my Lord, my Master, this is not your business. He said, this ocean, this material existence is like an ocean. And all the fools and rascals in this material existence, they're all like rocks just falling down to the bottom of this ocean and drowning in the ocean of birth, old age, disease, and death. Ram, you're supposed to be in Vaikuntha enjoying with Sita. Huh? Every now and then you come down and deliver the miscreants and, I mean, deliver the pious, annihilate the miscreants, reestablish the principles of religion. But really, Ram, you should be in Vaikuntha playing with Sita and having a beautiful time in the spiritual world. He said that your holy name, you have invested all of your powers and all of your glories in your name to constantly be within this material world to do this work of floating the rocks in the ocean, of uplifting the fallen souls and taking them out of this material existence. Therefore, my Lord, your holy name is the greatest of all deliverers. In fact, when Ram appeared, how many people did he deliver? How many demons did he liberate? How many people did he send back to Vaikuntha? When Krishna appeared, how many? Some. But in the forms of the name of Krishna and Ram, throughout all the ages, hundreds and millions and billions of people have gone back to the spiritual world. So therefore, your name is especially incarnated in this world to deliver the most fallen from the ocean of birth and death. And Hanuman said, and us, we are your devotees. It is our duty to just assist you in your enjoyment with Sita, and let us spread the glories of the holy name and float the rocks. This is all your pastime. Of course, Ram, you can float rocks. You can do anything. In the form of Shankarshan, in the form of Mahavishnu, you are creating millions and billions of universes and having each planet and each universe floating in its orbit. To float a rock? But you want to show us that you are empowering more of your glory for the delivering of the fallen souls in your name than in your own personal form. This is the power and glory of the name of God. It is the supreme purifier. So on the day of Dasara, what we should understand is the utter importance and significance within our life to take shelter of the holy name of Sri Ram and have him once and for all kill the Ravana of our heart and allow the pure love of the soul to shine for our own eternal enjoyment and for the benefit of all living beings. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. This is really the conclusion of all knowledge. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes.
Thank you.
I'm sure everyone in the room can relate to your question. Therefore, it is
Munaya Sadhu Prishtoham Bhavad Dhyaloka Mangalam Yat Kripa Krishna Samprasno Yenat Masu Prasidati.
Your question is all auspicious because the answer to this question is for the auspicious development of every living being who is on the spiritual path. This is the condition of a neophyte devotee, a sadhana bhakta. He is constantly struggling to control the mind and the senses. Sometimes the mind is called chanchalam. Huh? Krishna says in Gita, yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalam ashtita. He says, the mind is constantly wandering here and there. Whenever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, we must drag it back to the self. This is the process of sadhana bhakti. We should not be surprised when the mind goes running here and there. It's the nature of the mind. The difference between a Godas and a Goswami is not that the mind doesn't wander. It's the Goswami says no to the mind, and the Godas says very nice to the mind. Huh? Just like your mind may see an object to enjoy that you know is very sinful. A Godas, a servant of the senses, is thinking, oh, how very sweet, how very nice. It's Krishna's arrangement. Otherwise, he wouldn't have put this object before me. So let me enjoy. Huh? Our mind justifies. When the mind is attached to the senses, the mind is our worst enemy. Bandhur atmat manastasya yenat maivat manachata. See how the mind works. First, the senses give the indication. Ah, look at beautiful thing. Enjoy it, enjoy it. It's so wonderful. And your mind is thinking, ah, I know I'm not supposed to do this, but somehow or other, I really want to do it. Therefore, ah, I got it. I know. Now I have it all figured out. Not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of Krishna. And everything is his mercy. Huh? A devotee is supposed to see everything as the mercy of God. So therefore, this beautiful sense object is been given to me by Krishna, and it's his mercy, and it's an offense to not accept his mercy. Huh? So therefore, let me enjoy. It's God's wish. After all, God put us on this earth to enjoy, and we're not perfect, so you follow. That is called a Godas. A Goswami, the same inclination is there, the same temptation is there, but he's willing to take shelter of the verse of Gita. Krishna says, the senses are so strong and impetuous, Arjuna, that they forcibly conquer the intelligence even of a man of discrimination trying to control them. Huh? But then, Tani Saravani Samyamya Yukta Asita Matparava Sehi Asyandriyanita Siprakya Pratishtha. A Goswami is one who restrains his senses in times of temptation and trial. He restrains his senses by force of his intelligence, and he fixes his consciousness on Krishna. So the question is, will you be a Goswami or a Godas? That is your choice. The temptation will be there due to the natural conditioning of your mind. But Krishna says, by constant practice and detachment, the mind can be controlled. That means whenever the test comes before us, we must fix our mind on God and withdraw it. Like a tortoise withdraws his limbs within the shell, Krishna says, we must withdraw with our intelligence the senses from their objects. This is how you take shelter of Krishna. You have to practice. And by strong sadhana, under the supervision of spiritual master or the self-realized souls, we can learn gradually how to control our mind and senses through this process. It is not an immediate thing. It is a gradual process of purification. Huh? The more we taste Krishna, the more we become detached from the objects of the senses. But when the tests come, like you're explaining, we have to constantly practice. And if you have strong sadhana, and if you have association with saintly persons, when the test comes, you will have the strength, you will have the proper intelligence to restrain the senses and fix the consciousness on Krishna in that time. Huh? Chant the holy names. When you see the heads of Maya coming up in your heart, and you see there's a lack of surrender in your heart, you should just immediately cry out for the holy names of Krishna. Krishna, you're the only one who can protect me. You're the only one who can save me. Huh? So sadhana bhakti means steady, regulated spiritual discipline in our life, and regular association with saintly persons. If we have this, then we will gradually have the strength and the spiritual integrity to overcome the obstacles of this material energy and gradually become purified, where surrender becomes our very nature at all times. Huh? Is there any other questions? Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.